Ladies and gentlemen, if you go to LaGuardia, flight 6334, all seat, all group number, welcome to board this time.
Anywhere I go, like when I'm at the airport, you know, I've always got at least one person strikes up a conversation, and when it does, next day you know, I've got a lot of people around me.
Johnny Matheny is a popular guy.
You know, like in grocery stores, restaurants, it's nothing for people to come up and say, well, hi, Johnny, how you doing? And they'll want to shake hands or fist bump or something. You know, it's a constant thing.
And it's not just because of his big smile and easy way of talking.
So I'll get kids and I ask him, I said, you want to see a little magic? And I say, you want a fist bump? And yeah.
It's because Johnny Matheny is part robot.
And so I've got a quick disconnect. So I'll let somebody else hold the arm. And then I'll just play around with it. I'll wave at them or go up high five them with the arm that's not even attached to me.
Johnny Matheny is the first man in the world to be living with a mind-controlled prosthetic limb. That's right, mind-controlled. I'm Mick Ebling, and this is Not Impossible, a podcast where we spotlight inventions we may have thought were impossible, and the people who heard that and said, nah, I don't think so. We got this. This podcast is brought to you by Avnet, a company dedicated to helping creators of all types find whatever they need to get from idea to product and then to get their product to market anywhere in the world. Today, we're going down a rabbit hole where our growing understanding of the human brain makes it possible to give artificial arms and legs to people who've lost limbs, and to allow them to control those artificial limbs with their minds. I can't even believe I just said that, but it's true. And this very modern story begins way back. At the dawn of the Cold War.
A mighty roar. White hot flame gushes downward. And the great beast lifts slowly from the earth.
In the fall of 1957, the US government received an uncomfortable wake-up call.
We are about to create a new planet that we will call Sputnik.
Sputnik. The Russians were beating us in the race to space. And for the U.S., this was not cool. In reaction, the U.S. Defense Department created a new agency, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA. This agency had one mission, to pioneer advancements in the field of technology so that we would never again be caught with, well, our thrusters off. Here's what DARPA says about DARPA.
The mission of the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, is to make pivotal investments in breakthrough technologies for national security.
But how? How do you decide to stay on the leading edge of the tech curve and then just do it? Well, by summoning literally the top academics, researchers, and engineers in the country. DARPA did that, and they've kept doing it right up until the present day. A few years ago, one of the people they called on was a guy working in the field of neurotechnology named Justin Sanchez.
One day out of the blue, I got a phone call, and the person on the other end of the line said, we need you to come to DARPA immediately. We need you to work on neurotechnology for our country. In 30 days or less, I packed up my entire family and was in Washington, D.C. at DARPA, and you know, I've been on the most incredible adventure since then.
I love that. 30 days. And you were in Miami, right?
I was actually a professor at a university, and I had a lab, and I had students, and I had postdocs, and things were going really great. But, you know, when that call from DARPA comes and somebody asks you to serve your country, and to try to develop the most advanced technology that the world has ever seen, you have to go and do that.
Amazing. And that was how many years ago?
So I joined in 2013. So it was right around June of 2013. A lot of people don't know that when people come to DARPA, they're not permanent positions. They're term limited positions. And the agency does that for a very good reason. You know, since our mission is breakthrough technologies, we always have to have new creative ideas, new creative people. So there's a constant rotation of new people that have a spark that can push into that area.
Well, and I think there's probably also something psychologically motivating about term limits, you know, something that motivates you to continue to progress.
Yeah. You know, every day that I walk in to DARPA, you know, I view it literally like it's my last day at the agency. And, you know, there's an importance to every tick of the clock. And if you embrace that mindset, you know, there's really some extraordinary things that you can do.
Extraordinary does not even begin to describe what Justin was about to jump into. When Justin got the call from DARPA, the guy on the other end of the phone was a guy by the name of Dr. Jeff Ling. Dr. Ling was the manager of what they called the Revolutionizing Prosthetics Program at DARPA, and he had a vision. Another one of the guys that Dr. Ling recruited to carry out that vision was Dean Kamen, the inventor of the Segway. And before you all go running off to Wikipedia to check it out, no, he's not the guy who died driving a Segway off a cliff. That was the guy who bought the company from him. Just so we have that straight. Anyway, Kamen described Dr. Ling's vision like this.
Within a few minutes of when we meet Dr. Ling, he's pounding on my conference room table saying, look, Dean, at the end of the Civil War, we gave people, soldiers, a wooden stick with a hook on it when they gave their arm, you know, to a musket ball. Now it's 150 years later, we give them a plastic stick with a hook on it. He said, that's going to stop. You can't pick up a grape with a hook. You can't pick up your three-year-old daughter with a hook. You can't open a door with a hook. I want to put something back on these guys that's as close to the original equipment as possible. And it better be capable of picking up a raisin without dropping it. He wanted fine motor control. And it better be able to pick up a grape without crushing it. So now he wants feedback and sensing. And it better be able to run all day on its own power. So we got to tuck a lot of batteries into this thing. And it better not weigh more than the original equipment. I told him he was nuts. But you don't say no to Dr. Ling. So we started this project.
So Justin joined the team working to make this new arm a reality.
Trying to restore near natural prosthetic arm function to somebody was an incredible challenge. I mean, if you just look at your hand and your arm and how gracefully it moves and all of the different ways that it moves, that dynamic range and the gracefulness of all of those components, that's what we went after.
And they came up with something way better than a plastic stick with a hook on it. They fashioned an arm with joints at the shoulder, the elbow, and the wrist. And to that arm, they attached a beautiful lightweight hand with five fingers. Now, I want you to look down at your own hand for a second and imagine picking up a can of Coke, or pretend you're aiming a squirt gun, or holding a baseball,
strike one,
or delicately raising a China teacup. Notice how agile your fingers need to be to form all these different grips. This prosthetic hand, it's just that agile. And the machinery of the hand is all sheathed inside a translucent plastic layer to protect it from all of the spilled tea or dust from the pitcher's mound. It looks just like a robot wearing a surgical glove. Cool, right? It gets cooler. What if you controlled this plastic hand with your feet? You heard me right. The Revolutionizing Prosthetics team attached accelerometers, little sensors, to the patient's feet, literally making their feet into joysticks that control the motions of the arm, just like my kids control their characters when they're playing video games. So by 2016, the arm was ready to go out into the world, and they named it after a young man who famously got an artificial arm when he lost his in a legendary battle. It was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. A Jedi Knight named Luke Skywalker.
That's the Luke arm. Life under kinetic evolution is what that stands for. But, you know, we all affectionately call it just the Luke arm.
Now, hang on, Justin. Just so we're clear, did we retroactively back ourselves into a George Lucas character? Or did the Luke exist, and then it just so happened to coincidentally relate to the illustrious Luke Skywalker?
Let's just say that Mark Hamill has called out the Luke arm as saying something that he thought was really awesome. And there's a really nice tweet from him about that.
We have that tweet here, and I'm going to read it for you. At Hamill himself tweets, "Innovative prosthesis will improve the lives of amputees. Astonished and honored that scientists have named it the Luke." March 21st, 2016.
It was really inspiring to see the real Luke, say something about the arm system.
That's great. But as if designing a highly dexterous prosthetic hand wasn't a great enough challenge, the revolutionizing prosthetic program started working on a more direct form of control, a direct line of communication between the brain and the prosthesis, a brain-computer interface.
Okay, so a brain-computer interface is any sort of device that takes brain activity, decodes it into a signal that can then be used to power another device.
We're going to take a step away from DARPA for just a moment and talk to a friend of mine.
My name is David Petrino.
Who works in the field of rehab technology.
I am the Director of Rehabilitation Innovation for the Mount Sinai Health System.
David and I met sort of by accident a few years ago.
I first heard about Not Impossible Labs when I was sitting in a bar with a friend of mine, and he and I were having a couple beers. And after a few beers, he said, you do brain stuff, don't you? And I was like, yeah, I do brain stuff. He goes, you know, I've got this friend of mine. He lives in Canada. He's like a distant cousin, and he's doing this stuff with this like organization called Not Impossible. I think they really need some help. Can you give him a hand?
Yeah, we actually did need some help. In another episode of this podcast, I told you about a graffiti artist named Tempt One who was paralyzed with ALS. He could only move his eyes, and we invented a device that let him draw with that eye movement. And where you or I would click a mouse to engage a cursor, Tempt would blink to engage that cursor. But we were realizing that in working with Tempt, we had a new problem to think about. And that's where David came in.
At the time, we were trying to sort of plan for a contingency when he could no longer move his eyes, because ALS will slowly take away any movement that you can perform. And so although he can still use his eyes right now, there's going to be a time when he can no longer use his eyes to communicate.
And so we wanted to create a brain-computer interface that would, for example, allow Temp to click his mouse cursor on and off with thinking instead of blinking. What we didn't know is that this project would get its start where all of the best things in life come from, the kitchen.
The first thing we wanted to do was actually just see if it was feasible to build a low-cost EEG system.
EEG stands for electroencephalography, which is a way to monitor and record electrical signals that the brain gives off when it's working on something. We wanted to create a cheap way to measure that brain activity.
And so just by complete coincidence, my brother was in town, and he happens to be an electronic engineer. And so we were sort of sitting up and having a few beers. And as we tend to do when we get together, we just start building stuff.
Wait until you hear about David's brother.
My brother's name, not made up, my brother's name is Gino Petrino. We have a long history of doing silly things together. There was the time when he like convinced me that he would fix my toy car so it would go faster than anything else. You know, he would have been 12 and I would have been like 5. He managed to sort of put a mains power plug onto the back of this toy car, and then he plugged it into the wall, and this thing took off faster than you've ever seen anything take off, and then exploded into a ball of fire and set our living room rug on fire.
So flash forward a few decades, David and Gino decide this is the perfect time to build an at-home EEG.
My parents were asleep in the house, that's for sure, and my now wife was also over, but she was fast asleep as well. So it was basically the two of us, I think at that point, a nearly empty bottle of whiskey, and it's 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. It started off as a hypothetical conversation. You know, what are the components of a device that records brain activity? Okay, we need a preamplifier. Oh, we need some wires. Well, actually, I've got that, and I've got that, and I've got this sample from Texas Instruments. And we were plugging all of the wires into a breadboard, which is a sort of rapid prototyping tool. The breadboard was plugged in via USB to my computer, and I think the USB plug, we just like pulled it off a mouse, and we told my computer to recognize it like it would a microphone. And then the other end of the circuit was stitched into a sock, which I had sort of cut into kind of like a headband. And we just sort of wrapped the headband around my head and started recording. It did cross my mind that I was now strapping myself into one of his devices that have a history of blowing up. But yeah, it turned out okay.
David and Gino first tested the EEG to see if it could pick up on muscle movement by blinking and jaw clenching. That worked. Then, the moment of truth.
The final test, which actually looks for brain activity, is looking for an increase in a brain rhythm called alpha rhythm when you close your eyes. So I closed my eyes, we recorded some of the brain activity, we looked at it and we saw that my alpha rhythm increased when I closed my eyes. And that was when we knew that we were looking at brain activity and not just, you know, crazy noise in the room.
Translation, the damn thing worked. You see, that's the thing about this whole not impossible concept. While most of us sit around the kitchen and think it's a big deal if we make a perfect feta cheese omelet, sometimes you can sit around the kitchen and think, what if I strap some electrodes to my head with an old sock? It's literally food for thought. So the next question is, okay, where does that lead us? Can the concept behind those electrodes, which were strapped to a couple of half-drunk Aussies in the kitchen in the middle of the night, solve the problem that Dr. Ling was pounding on the table about?
I want to put something back on these guys that's as close to the original equipment as possible. And it better be capable of picking up a raisin without dropping it, and it better be able to pick up a grape without crushing it.
We'll tackle that question after the break. This is a podcast dedicated to technology for the sake of humanity. But it's also about the people behind that technology. If that's you, Avnet can help, no matter what you build. Why? Because they are the first company ever to offer true end-to-end solutions for product development in-house. That way, creators in any corner of the world can take an idea from prototype all the way through mass production. Are you a startup, an established OEM? Do you need help designing your product or organizing your workflow or getting stuff to market? Avnet's got your back. Your world is one that's always changing, and that's why Avnet is here to help you reach further. And we want to give a special shout out to Avnet's engineering communities, Hackster and Element 14, who help creators vet and invent the technology of tomorrow. Want to do more than just listen to this podcast? Maybe something like taking on the next Not Impossible challenge? Go to podcastnotimpossible.com to find info for you and for anyone who wants to take their project one step further. So a brain-computer interface can be as basic as an EEG that was born from a bottle of whiskey and a gym sock. Or it can be much, much more complex, say if you're building a brain-controlled prosthetic limb. Because in order to get the arm to respond to your thoughts, you have to do much more than just identify brainwaves. You have to be able to read and decode those brainwaves. It's a little like learning a new language, the language of the brain.
We are working extremely hard to try to figure out what that language is.
This is Justin Sanchez again, back at DARPA.
The brain doesn't have a manual to go along with it, right? For us, you know, language, right? The typical language kind of passed down through generations. People know, you know, the mechanics of it and how to use it. When it comes to brain and the firings of neurons, there's no manual, and we don't know what all of those impulses ultimately mean. If we can directly observe and monitor and interact with those neurons and relate it to a person intending to do something like move an arm or feel a fingertip, we can correlate all of those firing patterns of the neurons to the actual physical activity that's happening in the external environment around a person. And, you know, while that may sound simple, again, that relationship, that experimental paradigm is one of the breakthroughs that allows us to understand the brain in a way that we've never been able to understand the brain in the past.
So this is a giant exploration around figuring out how to map this neural activity
And then once you've done that mapping, how to create the correlations of the cause and effect so that you can apply that to how prosthetics, a natural prosthetic interaction might work for a returning veteran.
The way that you just described, you said, well, we're going to try to map all of the brain. And then once we map all of the brain, then we try to apply that to a a particular application space, let's say control a prosthetic limb. I say, no, we do it differently. We map the brain while we're trying to control a prosthetic limb. So let me just say that another way. We could spend decades observing just the brain, which has been done for hundreds of years. Or you can say, look, let me develop a new technology to go directly to certain groups of neurons which you think are involved in a function. Let me connect those neurons to a prosthetic device and see if a person can actually move it. It's very much a difference of being observational to being interactive. Remember, the brain is an interactive organ. And unless you're interacting with it in a very dynamic and kind of a rich way, it's very hard to study it.
And that dynamic approach that Justin describes, that takes us outside the lab.
It's very hard to anticipate when you're in the laboratory how somebody will actually use a prosthetic limb. Yes, you can design for all of the things that we talked about, but until somebody actually takes that limb home with them and actually use it in that setting, do you fully realize, did you design in the right way or did you design in a way that's not so optimal?
You remember our fist-bumping friend, Johnny Matheny? Well, at this point, Johnny was about to become the first man to live with a neurally controlled prosthetic limb at home. And not only that, but it would be the most technologically advanced prosthetic limb in the world. We reached Johnny by phone at his home in Port Richey, Florida, and we asked him how he got involved in this science fiction world of robotic arms and mind control. It's a really interesting story.
I grew up in Nitro, West Virginia, and my parents helped us all through our lives, by being there for us. After we graduated high school, then they decided to go in being foster parents, and not just for regular foster children, but for special needs foster children. And one of the foster children that they had in, they ended up adopted her, which is my youngest sister now.
Johnny's father, who's now 83, still takes care of Johnny's sister, who requires a lot of daily care.
I was the next in line to be able to take care of her. And that's the reason why this modular prosthetic limb is so special to me.
Johnny, like his parents, seems driven to give to others.
They give all their life, and, it's just kind of trickled over to me,
Even though in 2005, Johnny lost his left arm to cancer.
Then I decided I was going to pay my life forward because, I had two sons in the military. Both of them were, lucky enough to come back with other extremities, but some of their buddies didn't. I just told my prosthetist, I'd like to pay my life forward. Any study that may or may not work, just throw me in.
And that's how Johnny got connected with the DARPA-funded Applied Physics Lab at Johns Hopkins University. Now, at this point, the Luke arm they invented was commercially available and fully FDA approved. But there was a second arm, and that was only available for research. That's the one that Johnny volunteered to try out. It's called the Modular Prosthetic Limb, or MPL.
Johnny has been one of the very early people that have used the modular prosthetic limb, and he's even been able to take that limb home with him.
What's amazing about Johnny is that he can control the actions of that limb with his mind. But this is without having anything implanted in his brain. Instead, Johnny underwent something called targeted muscular reinnervation surgery, which means that the nerves that used to go to Johnny's arm, the arm that he lost to cancer, were reattached onto a healthy muscle in the remaining part of his upper arm, which he calls his residual limb. So here's what happens. Johnny thinks about an action, like, say, making a fist.
I do the thought.
His brain then sends signals to what it thinks is still his hand. But now those signals go to his residual limb.
Then as the thought goes down, wherever that particular thought was supposed to end up, it pops the muscle there.
two bands containing highly sensitive muscle and motion sensors are wrapped around that piece of his arm.
I wear 2 mile bands.
They pick up the electrical signals in Johnny's arm muscle and transmit them via Bluetooth, of all things, to the artificial arm.
Down to the MPL and creates the movement that I'm wanting.
And just like that, it works. Johnny thinks fist, and then the arm raises a fist in glorious, glorious triumph.
It's not a prosthetic arm anymore. It's my arm, my hand, because it's an extension of my body, and it does everything exactly like it should. You know, it should be from before. And my sister loves it. She just absolutely loves it. Because every time I go over to the house, I'll take it and I'll reach up and pat her on the head. She just grins. She just loving it.
And for the first time since he lost his arm, Johnny is able to do some of the things he misses, like hunt.
I used to bow hunt, regular bow. I deer hunted, squirrel hunted, groundhogs. I've already got my hunting license, and I'm getting ready to order me a crossbow so I can go out and start hunting again.
But his biggest goal is to do something he's never done before.
My main goal for the year, I said, you know, I'm going to do something that's going to be out of the ordinary, something I've never done in my life, which is play a piano. And myself and the arm together, we're going to play a song. It might only be one, but we're going to play a song. And the song that I chose is my dad's favorite, which is Amazing Grace.
This is Johnny Matheny on piano after exactly 3 months of practice.
I was able to pick up the right-hand side relatively fast, I guess, because I'm able to feel the keys. But now coming in with the left-hand side, no feeling in doing it, and so you know that side there. Yes, it's been extremely difficult right now to try to get the proper balance on striking the keys and all this kind of stuff. It's been a super challenge.
So that's been the next super challenge for DARPA. Now that you can make that hand move, how can you make it feel? That has led DARPA to a new research initiative called haptics. Now, if you've got a teenager in the house, or you are one in reality or at heart, haptics might ring a bell.
I was introduced to the Oasis at an early age because my mother used it as a virtual babysitter.
In the best-selling book Ready Player One, now a major motion picture, our teenage hero uses haptic gloves to move through the global multiplayer interface that is their virtual world. It's called the Oasis.
As soon as I was old enough to wear a visor and a pair of haptic gloves, my mom helped me create my first Oasis avatar. Then she stuck me in a corner and went back to work, leaving me to explore an entirely new world. On my hands, I wore a pair of state-of-the-art Okigami Idle Hands haptic data gloves.
In the book, these haptic gloves can touch and feel what exists only in this virtual reality.
Special tactile feedback pads covered both palms, allowing the gloves to create the illusion that I was touching objects and surfaces that didn't actually exist.
But a haptic hand isn't science fiction for Johnny.
In the near future, really near future, I'm going to have sensory surgery done. The MPL is already capable of sensory. All I gotta do is get my part done so I can tap into it. They're gonna put little cuffs on my bundle of nerves, and then it's gonna be Bluetooth, and it's gonna be both ways, and that'll be real time.
Prosthetic hands that feel, that is hard to believe. And that's also where our story ends for now. But really, at DARPA, that's where the story is just beginning.
While we started with a program called Revolutionizing Prosthetics to Restore Movement and Sensation, You know, being DARPA, we say, well, okay, what's next on the horizon?
So Justin, who by the way is now the director of the biotechnologies office at DARPA, told me what's next on the horizon. You're not going to believe this one. The next project that they're working on using this brain interface, it's not to hook up to an arm, but to hook up to your memories.
Again, back to that impossible or not impossible, you know, perspective. You know, a lot of people said it would be impossible to restore memory function in the human brain using a prosthetic device. And we said, well, no, well, let's first figure out how does human memory work. We would like to try to develop a neural prosthesis to enable a person to form that memory and then recall it whenever they needed to. It's all extremely complicated, you know, from a fundamental science point of view, and we've developed the foundational technologies for all of that.
But do you feel, while your space is really focused right now on this concept of prosthetics, especially with our returning veterans, do you believe that some of your work might lead towards the cure and or treatment of Alzheimer's?
We absolutely feel that if we're successful on this one little part of memory function that we're working on, that that knowledge will spill over into other areas of medical treatments. And Alzheimer's, without a doubt, is one of them. We asked the question, is there a future where one might be able to store, you know, the vivid aspects of memories that I think that we all experience, you know, birthdays or celebrations or the birth of your child, whatever it may be. Wouldn't it be amazing if you could kind of capture some of those aspects and be able to share it with others?
So for all the listeners, you heard it here first. If you go to 1-800-JUSTIN-SANCHEZ, you can have your memories downloaded. Just give him a call, send in a prepaid self-addressed stamped envelope, and that will sign you up.
I don't know about all of that because I know that that is impossible, but who knows what the future will hold.
Well, hang on. It's impossible for right now, correct? It's just you would say, Mr. Sanchez, that it is impossible right now.
Right now, it's absolutely impossible.
But maybe not impossible forever.
If there's one last idea that I can leave with you, is that while we've been talking a lot today about science and technology, one of the most impactful things that I've ever experienced with all of, you know, the participants is when they tell us that their life has been transformed by this technology. It's an unbelievable moment. Building technologies for that reason, to improve people's quality of life, it's one of the most rewarding things that one can ultimately do. Okay, so go out there and see what the possibilities are.
Okay, just to sum everything from the beginning to today in one word: amazing. Like I tell people, I said, you know, I always considered myself, you know, just an old backwoods country hillbilly. That's all I was. And, you know, now I'm being classified as, you know, the most advanced robotic amputee in the world. So, I mean, you know, I never thought my life was, you know, I'm just me.
So thanks for listening to Not Impossible. Thanks again to our sponsor, Avnet, a company that provides true end-to-end technology solutions to help people who make, well, anything, anywhere in the world, reach further. And I want to invite you to go check out their communities. Hackster, the world's fastest growing developer community for learning, programming, and building hardware. And Element 14, the biggest designer-engineer community on the planet. You can find links to their website on ours, podcastnotimpossible.com. You can also go to Podcast Not Impossible to see links for Johnny Matheny's website. Johnny Matheny has started a nonprofit organization called Starfish Prosthetics Foundation to help make high-quality prosthetics more affordable. His mantra: nobody should go without an arm. He chose the name Starfish because starfish have the ability to regrow their limbs. So you can find links to his website and to DARPA's if you want to check out their latest breakthroughs, all at podcastnonimpossible.com. Lizzie Peabody produced this episode. Our associate producer was Vicky Shirer. Our development director was Aaron Sullivan. Our director of partnerships, Joe Babarski. Max Lerman was the voice of Wade Watts in Ready Player One. Special thanks to Justin Sanchez, Johnny Matheny, David Petrino, Tim Kilbride for helping make this episode possible. And our executive producers are Phil Lerman and me. I'm Mick Ebling. Until next time, remember, the things in your life that you think you can't change, maybe you just can't change them yet. They may be tough, the solutions may be hard to find, but they're not impossible.